Live and direct from the 718 on MLK Day 2022. It's your boy Joel for an episode of the Global Citizen Podcast. Today I have my boy, a friend of the podcast, my brother from another, Rudy, aka Tiwu. Welcome back to the pod, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. How's everything going?
Everything is everything, man. Trying to lay low. You know, we kind of caught up on like this COVID shit is out of control and everyone is fearing. Well, some people are fearing for their life. Other people are out here living their life. I'm on the former, fearing a little bit, but you know, I'm good. How about you?
Same as you, man. I see a lot of people out and about living their lives and good for them.
Yeah.
But I'm just erring on the side of caution and just keeping it safe as much as I can, you know.
Right.
Certain logistics that I can't control that right. Send me out there. But besides yeah. that, I'm trying to stay safe.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that in a little bit. But I also feel like, man, you know, a part of me is like, I gotta live. You know, obviously, I haven't done anything crazy, but like, you know, I went to the museum on Saturday, and you know, the Whitney, and it was cool. It was like, wasn't a lot of people. People were pretty respectful. You had to show proof of vaccination. But other than that, you know, I miss going to a cafe. I like going to coffee shops and reading or working from there. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's pretty frustrating, but I guess it was, we should have seen this coming.
Yeah. I feel you on the, just getting a coffee from Starbucks, like between appointments. If you have a doctor's appointment at 10 and you get there early, you
yeah.
be able to chill in the Starbucks. Now they're like, you can't sit down. Just the little things like that I miss. And like even just going to a bar to catch a game.
I know.
Like those things are fun to do. Like I'm not really into the dancing or clubbing anymore like we used to do back in our days. But
right.
You know, I do miss like meeting up to get a drink at the bar and not have to worry about catching something.
No, for sure. For sure. For sure. I miss going to the gym and getting swole. But
yeah.
But, you know, I'm hopeful that this is, I mean, it's always going to be here, but I'm hopeful that it's the winter. And last winter was pretty whack, too. And I think this is kind of going to be the norm. But I have you on the pod today to talk, you know, about kind of, I mean, you're a teacher in the New York public school systems. Shout out to New York Public School Lunch. And, you know, it's been kind of crazy to see how public schools nationwide are kind of just like YOLO. And, you know, for those of us that are friends or family of teachers or parents who have to make a choice of sending their kids to school, it's been crazy to watch, especially in New York, when this mayor, the new mayor, Eric Adams, who's, you know, I don't know how whoever voted, but so far he's been showing me a whole lot of Homie the Clown.
A lot of fake swag. He says he's the swaggiest mayor in America. I just think it's fake bravado, but I'll keep my opinions to myself about that for now.
He needs to get an elliptical machine. Sorry, I'm not trying to fat shame, but if you want to get that swaggy. But, you know, I really kind of wanted to hear, you know, you're in terms of teachers outside of my mother, who's a former teacher, you're like in terms of your closest to family that I know who's in the school system, and kind of wanted to hear what it's been like. Before we get started, man, I got to talk to you about something really, really important. And, you know, I think it's really, really important that we talk about it today. Can you explain how the Raptors are an 8th seed in the East? They were a 6th seed a few days ago, and you know, I remember us having conversations and me telling you that y'all should blow it up. You know, when you were like during the off season, should the Knicks go for Fred VanVleet? I was like, I wouldn't want to give him a max deal. I don't know about Pascal. But now I feel like Homie the Clown because I mean, I know it eighth seed in the East, in the grand scheme of things, you know, that's not a team that's going to, you know, compete for a ring. But the Raptors look good, man. And Fred Van Fleet, honestly, like, I knew he was good, but, you know, they're giving him the keys. And he really has been showing the league that he's that dude. So as a Raptors fan, a New York Raptors fan, which is, you know, sometimes hard to wrap my mind around. Like, can you explain, like, the success that you guys have had this year?
I mean, the talent's always been there. I think they have a consistent coaching staff that encourages the strength of the players. Mm-hmm. And there's no real superstars on that team, so there's no real ego. Right. And I think, again, like Kawhi and Lowry leading the young core that's there right now help them have this mindset that, you know, we're just going to do the best we can in each game. And again, you see no egos on that squad. They pass the ball. They play defense. Some days you have a player like Gary Trent breaking out. Then some games you have OG breaking out. So I just think they work well together. They're a young core, and they're coached very well. I still think Nick Nurse is a great coach. I think last year, because of, you know, what happened with the team, that his name is not really mentioned amongst the greats in the current NBA coaching system. But I do think that everything is working well for them. And it starts from the top. You know, Masai is the best president and GM, I think, in the league. I think maybe all the sports leagues in North America.
Shout out to Kenya.
Yeah. Is he from – I thought he's from Nigeria.
I think it's Kenya.
Okay. I got to do my Googles. But, it starts with him. And then, you know, that culture is set. So even though we might not win a championship, we are still a team that players don't want to meet.
He is Nigerian. Sorry.
Okay. And we beat a lot of the good teams in the East. And I know today they're playing the Heat, even though K-Lo is not going to be there. So it would be interesting to see how well they do against, like, the Nets and Heat with the roster back together. Because the last time they played, you know, they were in COVID protocols or some were injured. So now that we're at full strength, it'll be interesting to see how well we play in the second half. And if you are going to vote, get Fred VanVleet on that All-Star
on the All-Star team. Game.
He deserves to be on there.
You mentioned Gary Trent Jr. Just to age ourselves for our listeners, we were together when his father, Gary Trent, was drafted.
I'm just here to represent.
And he's here to represent. Just to age ourselves. But, yeah, man, yo, it's been a pleasant surprise. And it's also always good to see how well put together teams that are managed properly will always be successful no matter who's on the court. So shout out to Masai Ujiri and Nick Nurse and those players, man. To be in this life, it's hard to be selfless. And I think the Toronto Raptors should be a metaphor for how motherfuckers should be in life.
I was going to ask you, man, what do you think about the Knicks? You got
the Knickerbockers?
You guys were supposed to be top of the East, and you're struggling a little bit. Cam Reddish is going to come and make a difference?
Well, let me start off by saying I didn't think we were going to be a top of the East this year. I knew that there would be a slippage because I think last year we overachieved, which is fine. I think Knicks fans are frustrated with Julius Randle, as they should be. And Julius Randle needs to grow some thick skin because in New York, it's what have you done for me lately. But I'm happy with the Cam Reddish trade. Honestly, man, I think it's just the next stop is Zion, baby. I feel it. It's not going to happen this year. Obviously not this year, not next year. But I really feel that at some point, Zion Williamson, and it could be 10 years from now, we get superstars when they're dried up.
I don't even see him playing in the league 10 years from now. He can't even play now.
I think he'll play. I have faith that he's going to get on the right path. I think a lot of us, me included, listen to the media too much and jump on those negative sound bites that he's too big. And he is big, but I hope that someone's in his ear and being like, man, don't be stupid. But, you know, the Knicks have been frustrating to watch, but one of the things that I am feeling good about lately is the play of RJ Barrett. Vince Carter called him, what do you call him? He didn't call him the greatest Canadian player, but the great Canadian NBA player. I think that the Knicks franchise for the next 2 to 5 years will go as far as he takes us. And I think Knicks fans, we just got to be patient. I'm in a Knicks chat on Facebook. And I think that sometimes we Knicks fans, you know, man, we pull the emergency brake too quickly. But one thing I will say, I'll be damned if I ever cheer for the New Jersey Nets. Oh, sorry, the Brooklyn Nets. I'll be damned. They could win 3 titles in a row. And I got no issues with any of those players. You know, I actually love Kevin Durant. Even though James Harden looks like Kimbo Slice, he's nice. Kyrie Irving's a weird dude, but like, you know, and you know, people go back and forth with him and not being vaccinated. But when the guy's on the court, it's magic. I even watched Uncle Drew because I like Kyrie Irving, and that shit was terrible.
A horrible movie.
So bad. So yeah. Bad. The only reason I watched it because I was on a flight. But I'll be damned if any New Yorker comes to me cheering "Let's Go Nets." That's for those. That's the hipsters team. But you know,
I mean, I hope the team doesn't win the championship. To be honest, I don't like the way Harden devote his way to that team. And again, I'm not. Is your personal preference about the vaccination or not? I just feel like, you know, you made a declaration that he's not playing halftime. Either he's a full-time player or not. And then when they start losing games or losing players and things get a little tough, they're like, oh, let's just swallow our words and let him back in.
Well, do you think he's about to be a full-time player? Because KD's hurt now. And if the Nets if the Nets want to not slide in the stand, because even though James Harden is playing better, the rest of that team is gutter trash. Like, you got Patty Mills, Joe Harris is hurt, Blake Griffin is done.
They say that, and then he comes out and does something well. I don't think Blake is done. I just don't know his capacity on that team. Mm-hmm. He has his moments. Like, we thought he was done after Detroit, and he came. And he was an impactful player for a bit in the playoffs.
Mm.
So we'll see about Blake. And, I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge is doing his thing, I guess.
Shout out to him coming back after the heart issues. But do you think that the Nets will what do you think will happen first? Do you think that they'll pay the fines, or do you think Kyrie will actually get vaccinated?
100%. I think when it matters, Mayor Swagger probably had this little contract with them. Like, oh, you know, it'll look bad if he goes back full time, but paid his $5,000 fine for what, the next 30 home games they have, maybe, or like 20 home games. I mean, if I was a California team, I would start talking to legislation to make sure that he doesn't play in California.
Right.
You know, well, I think Golden State, if they go to Golden State, which everyone's predicting to make the finals, he can't play in those games if they do make it to the finals. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I would have traded Kyrie personally in the beginning of the season.
For Ben Simmons, maybe?
I was thinking about that, but you said that it wouldn't mesh well. So... But then Kyrie said he's going to retire, so who knows, man.
I thought he was going to retire, but I don't know. I think that, you know, for me, even though in New York, for example, the rules are kind of weird where visiting players could come through, I think people – what's going on with Djokovic? I know some people are defending him, but, like, bro, like, follow rules and don't lie. If you feel so passionately about getting vaccinated, then stay with your chest. Like Aaron Rodgers, like – you don't want to get vaccinated. Just say you're not going to get vaccinated, but you're going to, you know, lie. Just say it with your chest, bro.
Yeah.
Or brah. Anyways, but shout out. Oh, my last Raptor question for you before we get to the topic at hand. So let's say, you know, you're chilling at home and then you get a call. And it's Masai Ujiri, the GM of the Raptors. He calls you. He's like, yo, what up? What up? What up, Tiru? What up, God?
Yeah, I'm quitting my job.
So you quit your job.
With the quickness. Then, just kidding.
And then you're like assistant to the assistant GM. And he's like, yo, what should we do during this trade deadline? And what should our plan be for the next 1 to 3 years? What would you say?
I would try to go after Miles Turner. Probably the number one player I think they should go after.
Yeah,
I think he could mesh well with their system, but who am I willing to give up? I heard rumors that, you know, they are in the mix to get him, but OG Anunoby might be the person they might trade.
Yeah,
I don't know if I would do that. I think
OG,
he's a good player. I think that we haven't seen his true potential. I would, if I could get rid of like Chris Boucher, or not get rid, but like trade Chris Boucher, maybe some draft picks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do that for Miles. But yeah, I think we need to get a center or a person who could definitely space the floor with them and not just stay in the middle like the players they have now. Right. But I think, you know, they're very creative. Like, they're very long and tall team. So I think if they do nothing, we'll still be fine. I mean, the chemistry's there. I feel like they need to give Scotty Barnes the ball more. I feel like he had a hot start, and now he's kind of dwindling because the plays aren't really made for him. But I guess they do want to make the playoffs, and you don't want to put your hands into a rookie's hands. Or you want to put your team's future in a rookie's hands right now. And they've always been, you know, like slow burners. Like VanVleet was a slow burn, and now he's hot. Siakam, when he first came out, wasn't really a name, but now he's, you know, one of the best 50 players in the league right now. So, you know, I would either just go for Miles, or I'll just stand pat and not trade anyone.
Fair enough. But they're in an interesting position, and they're fun to watch. They're fun to watch for sure. Shout out to the Raptors.
So I have one more question before we get into the other talk. In terms of other teams that you foresee making it to the playoffs, like, what's the surprise team that you've been watching that you're like, wow, this team's actually pretty fun to watch? Maybe on the Western Conference or whatnot.
Yeah. You know, I don't think there have been any real surprises this year, but I am interested in seeing. I mean, I don't like Daryl Morey that much anymore. I just think he's kind of a dick. But I think the Sixers, I think if Ben comes back, man, they're really primed to make a lot of noise in the East. I think Embiid is a beast. He's a monster. And they need Ben Simmons. That's what they're missing. So I'm interested in seeing what they do. I also think that as much as people are hanging on the nuts of the Golden State Warriors, man, I really think the Suns are going to go back to the finals. I think they're kind of just quietly at the top of the West. Chris Paul, man, Chris Paul, he's 37 and he's doing his thing. And there's no reason for me to believe that my early season pick of a rematch of Suns Bucks wouldn't happen again. I think, to the dismay of many, the Lakers are, man. And I like Russell Westbrook as a person, actually. Yeah, last year, I really kind of saw some of the great things. I mean, I live in DC, and he played for the Wizards, and saw some of the things he was doing in the community there, as well as saw the documentary on the History Channel.
Oh,
it was History Channel. Yeah, the one about Tulsa was really good. But man, he's a train wreck, dude. Like, that guy, yo, he can't be on a team with other superstar players. It needs to be him and a bunch of shooters, or maybe him and another volume shooter, where they kind of just take turns, because I actually feel bad for him. He looks terrible on the Lakers, and you can't have your third best player, one of your top three players, playing like that and expect to go far. And I actually feel for LeBron James, because LeBron James is, what, 37, and he's still, you know, he's definitely slowed down, but what he's doing is incredible, and it's just a shame that it's gonna go to waste.
We'll talk about that, I guess, next time. But like, what do you foresee with the team next year? Like, are they gonna try to get rid of Westbrook before the trade deadline, you think? Even though I don't think
how are they gonna do that, unless I don't see how they're gonna be able to do that. Like, Westbrook, I think he has a player option after next year for like $80 quadrillion. I have to look at it, but what do you do? You know, I think it's you know, they'll make the playoffs, but they're not gonna go very far unless they click. I mean, there is a whole second half of the season left. But, you know, who's to say? But I think, again, my surprise team is the Sixers. I think, even though they're like six right now, I think that they're playing quite well, despite the fact that Joel Embiid's already been hurt, and Ben Simmons hasn't been playing. And I think that if he comes back, or they're actually able to get some stuff for him, I think they could really make some noise. But like, the Heat are also kind of there. They're playing well, but no one's really talking about them too much. They haven't been healthy. What about you? Before we get started, I want to know who you're.
I'm really liking the Bulls this year. I think they're a fun team to watch. I'm so proud that DeRozan, you know, is back in the headlines doing his thing.
My NDNA, my fucking Bulls Nation.
Yeah, Windy City Boys.
Yeah, Windy City Boys.
But yeah, I'm really happy to see like them mesh well together because everyone was saying that this team would not work on paper, and they managed to do it.
Really good this year.
And coming off the bench doing what he does when he's not injured.
Yeah,
I think there'll be a team to watch during the playoffs.
For sure.
And I'm even like Zach LaVine, like checked his ego and is working well with DeRozan.
I think the Olympics changed him.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see that team play well. So that's my team. That's a team I didn't expect to do so well. And I'm glad they're doing well. Because I think, like people say, New York Knicks need to be good for the NBA. I think Chicago needs to be good for the NBA as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Bulls fans don't actually care about like superstars. And even though they had Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Derrick Rose, but those are kind of homegrown talent. They're not big into like splashy signings, even though they paid a ton of money for DeMar. But DeMar's game has evolved. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it as a Raptors fan, but his game's evolved, man. I mean, I know he's always had a mid-range game, but I feel like it's gotten more gully. And he's more of a playmaker.
Yeah. I think that Spurs system helped him out a bit. Just going from one system to playing with one of the best coaches of all time to now like kind of being like the veteran on this young core.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to see.
And his collection of Kobes are pretty hot.
Yeah.
Julius Randle had a pair of Kobe the other day that were really hot. They're like confetti. I don't know. Anyway, we'll just, that's for another episode.
Our sneakers
episode. The sneakers episode. I've been good so far in 2022. I haven't bought any. Even though we're 17 days into the year. All right. With that said, man, you know, as I kind of like prefaced before, you know, since like late fall, early winter, globally, we've been dealing with Omarion, aka Omicron variant of COVID. Sorry, Omarion. Shout out to him. It's literally running through people. It's like, yo, every other day you hear someone getting it. But I think what's made this variant unique, outside of like its contagiousness, how contagious it is we see kind of the U.S. government, not taking the type of restrictions we saw at the beginning of the pandemic. It's almost as if the government doesn't really care that much anymore. They're still pushing vaccines, but even Fauci's language is changing, as we heard about, like how long you need to quarantine if you're asymptomatic or if you are a nurse or if you're vaccinated. And it's all kind of linked to like keeping the economy moving. And as we see, other countries are being more strict than we are, for example, Australia. But like kind of one thing that shocked me from things I've heard from you and other people who have kids is how schools have been open, despite it all. There was an episode on The Daily about the Chicago school system, which is kind of eye opening. So I guess as a public school teacher, I really would like to hear from you. Like, how's it been, yo? Like, how has these past 2 weeks been?
It's been, kind of strange because we're going to an unpredictable environment, and every day as a school teacher, it's always unpredictable. You never know like how the classes are going to be, how admin's going to be. So things are always unpredictable. But when you have a rising pandemic or another wave happening, and you're actually in the classroom with a full group of kids, it's not like last year when we only had like 5 or 10 kids in the class. Now we have like 20 plus kids in each class. So it's kind of like Squid Games or Hunger Games, where you come in and then, like, you see a staff member not there for a few days, and then you were with that said staff member in a meeting, and you're like, am I a close contact? And then you can't get tested in the schools because there's not enough tests to go around, or they're only testing a certain amount of teachers or kids. So we're not getting the true number of how many people are really sick. And, of course, you know, I'm not a parent yet, but you have kids who are coming to the building who are sick, and they're not staying home because their parents have to go to work. So there's no real like consistent or structured protocol or policies on how to handle this. It feels like every day you get some brand new news. Like, I got something from the Citizen app the other day that said like the Department of Health in New York is now not doing contact tracing. Like, if you're sick, you could call in if you want or something like that. But they're not, like, contacting people if you were a close contact anymore. And that's from the State Department. Yeah. Oh, and now, all of a sudden, when that happened, you see the numbers go down. So, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or any of that. But it's just, I feel like the government, like you said, is just like, let's just get this money.
Right. Let's just get this paper.
Let's keep these people working. And, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking because, you know, we are professionals. We do know what's best for our kids and our school systems. And we have these people who probably haven't been in the classroom in over 40 years making decisions about what they don't know is going on.
Right.
And it's like it went backwards. The one thing I had about COVID when we went remote is like, this is the future. This is going in the right direction. And then it's kind of going back to square one. So a lot of like, you know, things I was hopeful about in terms of the future of education is kind of like not there anymore, because either they don't want to invest in the future of the kids, or they just don't want to, they don't care.
I have a follow-up question to that. That was actually one of like the last questions I had, but I'll get back to it. But what do you think? So now you're saying how, you know, now the State Department is changing their methods of contact tracing. But what do you think? What should school accountability look like in the time of COVID-19? Like, it just sounds like the way things are being done, no one could be held accountable for anything, pretty much. I mean, you could always trace it back to like the powers that be, so the administration, and then they could probably push it to the government. But what does accountability look like?
To me, if you know people are sick in the building, if half your staff members are out because of COVID, then close the school for a few days. You're putting a lot of burden on educators to do double the work, take care of, they're taking kids from other classes, put them in all one big class. So again, it's less safe because you have more kids in the classroom. They're not traveling as much as they used to. Because I work in the middle school and high school, so, you know, kids travel class to class. So I think if half your staff is not there, then you should close the school, because obviously it's not a safe environment. There's obviously they're getting sick inside the building, or something happened where it's spreading across the building. You know, they're collapsing classes, so there's no learning really going on. Like, I remember when the week before Thanksgiving, week before Christmas, when the numbers started really rising, like we had at least 35 staff members out. That's including like the lunch ladies, a lot of teachers, people who work in the school building. They were not in the building. And a lot of kids were not there as well, but it's like there's no learning going on because you're putting kids in different grades in one classroom. So it's like I felt like in that moment, remote learning would have been best because, you know, you could still give some kids some normalcy. Whether it's on the computer, it's still getting their education. It's not like you're putting a bunch of different kids in one classroom and they're watching Shrek Forever or whatever on the TV. Or so they're on their phones for 8 hours.
Right. So basically, do you feel like this school year is kind of like it's becoming a wash?
I would say somewhat, yeah, because they canceled the Regents already for the
– Oh, my God.
They canceled the Regents. And
real quick for people who aren't from New York or listening, when you go to a New York City public school, when you go to a New York City school, forget public school.
New York school in general.
When you apply to colleges, they look for your Regents grades. It's like, you know, you take them from, I mean, maybe it's changed, but for me, you take it from your freshman year onwards. Yeah, I actually failed my math Regents and then had to go to summer school so I could pass. And then I cheated off of someone in summer school to pass that Regents. So shout out to cheating. But no, I mean, don't cheat. But it's just to prove to you the importance of the Regents exam when you come from the state of New York.
You asked me a question?
No. I'm just letting you continue. I just wanted to make sure that people understood, like, what Regents, how important the Regents exams are if you come from the state of New York.
Yeah, so they're very important, and they canceled it for the second year in a row. So I teach middle school, and I know the kids will be taking the state tests in March, And that's probably still up in the air if that's happening, even though I think they will happen. But I feel like in terms of is the learning year a loss, I would say we started off very strong, but I just think with all these, you know, changes with the health protocols and parents scared to send their kids to school, older educators scared to come into the building because they don't want to get sick, teachers who live with their parents who are older, like it's just been a hot mess. No one should have to be fearful of going to their jobs. And I feel like there's still a lot of fear going on. And even the stuff that they promised, like mask and free at-home testing, we don't get that continuously. They just say stuff in the media, and then we don't really see what's going on in the building. So, like, you had, like, the former mayor, Swagless de Blasio, making all these claims that schools are the safest places, but they're only testing, like, 10% of the kids in each building. So, of course, when you test a small amount, a lot of the numbers are going to be low.
What's been the attitude of the students, you know, like students who are there, who are old enough to understand the severity of the issue, are being packed into classrooms? Like, what's their attitude? Are they like kind of business as usual, kind of walling out as kids do? Or are they scared, or are they disengaged? Like, what's their attitude?
I would say most of my kids that I've been teaching are very resilient, much more resilient than the adults, I think. the kids come, you know, every day is new. They don't know if they're going to be with their regular classmates. Are they going to have some new class members come in for that particular day? But they roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. And whatever assignment you give them, they just try to do the best they can. I would say working with the kids has, of course, been the best part of this whole time, is because at least myself, I hope I provided an escape for them in case if they are really dealing with COVID situations. Mm-hmm. And again, you just try to modify your lessons to reach them. And you got to understand that they are dealing with it as well as we are. They might have some fears that they're scared to say out loud. I do have students who did get COVID and they're coming back in the building, but you know, they're getting right back to it. So I would say, again, the kids have been very resilient, and that's good to see.
What about – that's great. That's great to hear. That's great to hear. What about parents? Are parents reaching out to you guys more, saying, we don't know what to do? Can you provide this, that, and the fourth? Or are parents – like, I know, for example, if I – you know, it's easy for me to say because I ain't got no kids, but I would have a hard time sending my kid to school, a real hard time. But I'm privileged in the sense that I can work – from a treehouse, essentially. But are parents kind of like, do you feel that they're eager to send their kids to school, or are a lot of parents holding their kids back? What's your sense from the parents?
Well, I had some parents contact me when their kid did test positive for COVID and asked me to post work for them in the Google Classroom. So, but I have some kids I haven't seen since the numbers started rising. So pretty much for a month, I haven't seen some students because I guess they're scared to send them to school or some other reason. But I feel like the parents, again, are just like the teachers and the kids. They're just doing the best they can. We had a school closing a few days before the Christmas break, and we found out literally the evening before. So I guess the parents, again, have to just roll the punches because they don't have like 24 hours to make plans for sitters or someone to watch their kids.
Right.
But like all of us, we're just kind of going through the motions and trying just to adjust to whatever information is provided to us. It's the only thing you can do. I mean, this is a job we chose, you know, they're sending us into the building. We just got to do what we got to do. We still got to make a paycheck.
Right.
And I mean, fortunately I'm a young, you know, fairly healthy person. So if I do get COVID again, I think I'll be okay, but I just worry again about the kids who have like asthma. And there's a lot of kids, especially in my school population, who are not vaccinated. So like you worry about them also. And
are they not vaccinated because go ahead.
And the kids are not vaccinated when they're allowed to at this age. You assume maybe that their parents aren't vaccinated either.
Right. So you spoke before about kind of the option of remote learning and that it should be there. I mean, we know that, you know, even from hearsay, that remote learning is changing schools. Moving forward, how do you think like teacher prep programs need to shift to meet this new demand of teaching? Because, you know, COVID isn't going anywhere. And while the cases might drop as the weather gets warmer, I think a lot are feeling that every winter, this is kind of going to be the case.
I think you're right about that. I feel like they need to either, again, kids should be in school. I'm not saying they shouldn't be, but when the numbers are this high, there's got to be another plan in place. Because I know if I had kids, which I don't, I wouldn't feel safe either sending them to a environment where I know not everyone's wearing a mask, because you put kids go to the lunchroom or the gym. When you're playing basketball, the last thing you think about is a mask, right? Or when you're eating, you can't have a mask on. And you're young. You want to communicate. But I still think there should be a remote option. The thing is, I feel like the government wants teachers to teach live and teach the kids online instead of having teachers who work only on the remote and then have teachers who do live work. It can't. They want to do both together at the same time, and that's just disastrous because, you know, education is not like a come one, come all thing. It has to be set for a certain amount of kids. I feel like people think that teachers could teach 100 kids in one class, and if you're a really good teacher, then you reach all 100 kids. And that's not the way it works, because different kids come with different skill sets, different disabilities, different levels of reading levels, and how they like everything's just different. So I feel like as education is evolving and we now have this remote capacity, that they should train teachers just for remote purposes in case this happens again. And of course have teachers teach live, but that expect teachers to do it all and then wonder why we're burning out or why, you know, a lot of people are calling out sick is because we're tired.
Right.
And they keep adding more to us. Like they feel like they're teachers. They've been able to handle all this on their own. So let's get them more responsibilities. And I feel like it's just that master slave capacity mindset, because these people who work in politics are saying, oh, they should be able to do this and we're paying them. So they have to do it. And I don't think that's fair. I feel like in the public service sector, like teachers are on the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though your guys' job is really hard and really important, you know, it's the most important, if you ask me, right after healthcare, obviously, because, you know, people who have kids who have no choice but to go to work rely on teachers to not only educate their kids, but to watch their kids for 8 hours a day.
And make sure
They're safe, which is sounds kind of questionable. You spoke kind of like what the administration feels that. But what do you think people should know as a teacher in New York City? What do you think people should know about the critical race theory debate in schooling right now?
Again, I'm lucky that I teach in New York because I could go do my job and not feel guilty about withholding information or telling them a false narrative. I feel bad for teachers in those states that are being run by, you know, Republicans who are saying, don't talk about slavery. Don't talk about the Holocaust.
Right.
Like, this is part of our history. This is like, this world is not perfect. And for it to be a better place, we got to learn about the hardships and learn from those mistakes. If they want us to teach like how Christopher Columbus was a great man, then we're doing a disservice to all young people. And young people are not dumb. They could get the information quickly if they want to. So I think it's best that we have this dialogue and let kids know about, yeah, your ancestors were not great people, but this is how we learn. We don't want to repeat these mistakes. It's like they're slowly trying to make this country forget about its hard past, and they're going to raise a bunch of kids who don't know anything about what really happened. So again, I feel fortunate to teach in New York because at least I don't have to worry about that. But who knows what happens on a federal level if someone else becomes in charge. But for now, I'm glad I'm able to talk about what I can with the kids and I don't have to withhold information. And again, the kids are not dumb. They know the truth. If they want to get the truth, they can just go on their phone and find it. So,
yeah, that's for sure. And I guess my last question to you. So now, man, you've been a teacher for a minute now. I think you're
about 12 years, 13 years.
12 years.
After the 10th year, I stopped counting.
Yeah. So you've been in this game for a long time. I mean, what do you think is and isn't working in the field of education right now? I mean, obviously the last 2 years have been crazy. No one could have predicted it. But with that said, like what do you think is working? What do you think isn't working?
Well, I can start with what's not working.
Yeah.
I think class size plays a big part. Mm-hmm. I think we need to invest in schools.
Right.
We give the police department a lot of money.
Do we ever?
We give, and understandably, the fire department a lot of money, but we don't need tanks going down Times Square. That money could go to a new school building. We need to, as the population gets bigger and bigger, we need to like start putting kids in environments that will help them learn. How is a student supposed to learn with 20 other kids and five of those kids have IEPs, so it makes them hard for them to focus?
What's an IEP?
It's an individual educational plan. It's for kids like myself who were learning disabled. Gotcha. They have like the teachers work with the kids and give them a plan on what they need to do to be successful in the classroom. But, you know, these kids sometimes are not in the right class environment. So I think we definitely need to make the class size smaller. Also, I feel like in New York, there's not a lot of enrichment. It's just straight academics and academics. We're training our kids to become pretty much workers. We're not really encouraging our kids to think creatively.
Mm.
There's no music program, as far as I can know, I know, in any of the schools I worked at. I worked at two schools. But like, there's no real music or arts program. Even the after school programs are like more academics, more tutoring. So I feel like we just are making our kids workers. We're not giving them a chance to learn about other things as well. Mm-hmm. Like I know when I was growing up and I went to school in the suburbs, we had arts, we had music. I learned how to play violin, trumpet, and I don't really see those programs in New York City anymore for our kids. It's just work, go to school. Here's 45 minutes of gym time. Well, sorry, 30 minutes of gym time because you spend 15 minutes getting dressed in the beginning and dressed after. So here's 30 minutes of your gym, and then here's 30 minutes of lunchtime, and then get back to work. We're not really giving these kids a chance to be kids, number one, anymore, and it's just straight academics all the time.
Mm.
And I know growing up, I wouldn't like school if that was what school was.
Right, me neither.
I didn't like it to begin with when growing up. But if it was just straight academics the whole time, then I would have checked out a while ago. We got to give these kids a chance to have fun and be creative. And the fact that they're talking about extending the school year or making school days longer, you're just pretty much training these kids to become workers, or slaves, in my opinion. Like, just work for the government and have people tell them what to do. And I don't want to be part of that system, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful to hear that, you know, you're training kids to be workers and slaves. In terms of advocacy, you know, these ideas that you push, you know, I mean, I don't know much about how it works for teachers where they're able to share these ideas with a former or incoming administration. But do you think those suggestions get heard, or you think it's kind of just kind of like in one ear and out the other?
I truly believe whoever gets into education at first wants to make a change. No one comes into education to make money. But when you become, I guess, a principal or superintendent or even chancellor, you still have someone who's above you, a boss, who doesn't really understand what's going on in that particular classroom. You can't please everybody. But what I do know is a lot of teachers are complaining about the fact that, you know, you can't reach all 30 kids in the classroom, especially if they're at different learning levels, or you can't, if God forbid a kid gets in a fight, there's no consequences. There's just things that are happening where it's not really in best interest of the kids or the teachers. It's mostly about just producing statistics that look good. Oh, we have the highest graduation rate, but how many of those kids are really ready for college?
Right.
Like how many, like, are we letting slip through the crack just to get these numbers up?
Right.
It can't just be about numbers, I think. I think it has to be about the person. And I just feel like there's no empathy when it comes to the education system. I just feel like it's just work for the kids. And whatever changes that we want you to do, teachers, do it now. I feel like we need empathy back.
For sure, man. Do you ever think of, after your teaching career, doing more on the advocacy side to push some of those ideas that you mentioned?
I've thought about it. I'm not sure I'm there yet in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, I have a chance to retire at 55 if I want to.
Nice.
I'm not sure I'm going to retire that early.
Right.
But I would think if things don't get better, then maybe I'll do that. But I say that to say this. I would like to help evolve education one way or another. Now, I'm not really an advocate. I don't really, like, you know, talk about politics too much. But I do know what kids like. I know mm-hmm. it engages them. And I know, like, some parts of school is not it. And we have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to be one of the people in the room to hear what they have planned for the upcoming years and see how I could provide some feedback as well.
That's what's up. Before I let you go, I mean, we kind of, when I asked you what's working, what's not working, I heard the what's not working. What do you think is working?
Good question.
Yeah.
Well, what I think is working is that it's been a tough year. So let me think about this.
No, for sure. I mean, obviously it's been a tough year. But what I like so far, what you said, is the resiliency of kids. That's great to hear that, that despite it all, they're eager to learn, which is great. Cause I know I'd be trying to go home.
I would say I work in a good school.
Mm-hmm.
I say, we have very supportive administrators, great staff. And I think just speaking on my current work environment, just having educators have each other's back, be supportive. I see that what's working is that during this trying times, teachers for the most part are trying to do the best we can with what we have. And it just shows that whatever they throw at us, yeah, we're going to complain. We're going to disagree, but we're still going to do what we can to make sure we're there for the kids.
That's what's up, man. I mean, it's good to know that there is solidarity amongst teachers. And New York City is such a kind of an eclectic place that you would think that that can help carry people through rough times, despite the fact that you got to look at administration as well for them to make the big changes. But Rudy, man, stay safe, man. Thank you so much for doing this. I know it's probably not the most fun thing to talk about, kind of a failing and struggling school system. But thank you for all that you do. My mother was a teacher, so I know the importance of education. I was reminded every day.
I mean, your mom's a West Indian teacher. That's a big difference.
strict Haitian fashion. I was reminded every day. Right. Not so strict anymore. Now she's just chilling. But yeah, man, we'll have you on again. We got a whole lot of stuff to talk about, the NBA season, sneakers, this, that, and the third, man. But thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, man. This was fun.
All right, peace.
Peace. Hey, yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say. I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town.